Congressman Mike Rogers, who probably needs to get a workout in after all the stresses and strains of the last couple of months in D.C. How are you, Congressman?
I am doing well, Tony. I just want to know if you're trying to tell me something, tell me to get a workout in.
You know, seeing this process unfold, a lot of those, I just imagine a lot of the people involved need a little R&R to kind of recharge the batteries and have a clear brain that can think about positive things.
Yeah, it was. I have to tell you, it was very intense. I haven't seen negotiations like that since I've ever been involved in politics. And you know, it's good that we get away from Washington D.C. for a little bit to get recharged and reconnected to people and get back to work.
How'd you vote on that bill?
I voted for it. I thought default, as you and I talked about, was just a non-starter for us. And I tried to tell those who said it wouldn't really matter that if you're wrong, you ruin the U.S. economy, and if I'm wrong, we get cuts and finally starting to put ourselves on the path, just not as much as we want. So I think if you're going to err, you err on the side of getting a pretty good deal versus a great deal.
This reminds me when you and I had a conversation about how you voted when it came to helping the auto industry. Obviously, you have a vested interest in that. But when you look at how Republicans stand on issues like that, it seems like, as opposed to going with the Republican model or maybe with a lot of folks that you have great working relations with, you just try to do what you think it may be in the best interest of the people who voted you in.
Well, I hope so, and I try to do that on every vote. And you know, some of them are very difficult. This one was difficult. I wrestled with this one trying to figure out where, you know, what was the right way to approach this thing. Because I do believe that we've got a debt and deficit crisis. But at the same time, I didn't think average people who sitting around the kitchen table are the ones that ought to pay the price for it. So that's the way I came down to my conclusion. And I thought we could get a little something now and keep on working toward progress versus just, you know, folding my arms and saying absolutely no. And I think it was the right decision. I stand by it.
Well, there are a lot of people who disagree with you who think that we've been living on borrowed time, borrowed money, if you will, for too long, and we need kind of a kick in the pants to get us to really attack this budget deficit, that what is planned is not nearly enough, and that we are in deeper financial trouble than most of the American people realize. How would you respond to that?
Well, I do think we're in very, very serious trouble. But you can't solve the problem without at least taking, you eat an elephant sometimes one bite at a time. And I looked at this as a big chunk. And it was never meant, this was never meant to be the sole solution to our fiscal problems. It was, and think about it, a year ago we weren't talking about cutting anything. But the president's budget this year that he proposed was $10 trillion in new debt. $10 trillion. Brand new debt. So if we hadn't been there and started drawing some lines in the sand and saying, hey, we can't continue to do this, it's irresponsible, we wouldn't even have gotten as where we are today. And you saw what a fight it was to get two-thirds of all the levers here in Washington, D.C. to stay, that they weren't going to even spend more money. And so I think that hopefully that sent a pretty good signal to Americans that, listen, there are a lot of people here who simply still do not understand that we have a debt and deficit problem. I don't think ruining the whole economy is the way to fix it. I believe in responsible finances, and I think the way you do that is get through this one. And again, this wasn't designed to fix the whole problem, and now we have budgets that we have to pass, and those budgets should reflect putting us on a path to accountability and capping and curbing expenditures in the future.
We've had the opportunity to talk with a lot of nonpartisan financial experts, economy experts, and all of them pretty much to the person say there is no way that we are going to get close to balancing the budget without obviously getting more revenue in. We need to get more people paying taxes as opposed to raising the taxes on the few who are paying it now, and that we have got to raise more revenues and we need to raise taxes a little bit to more of those people. How do you respond to that?
Well, Listen, I don't think that's right. One of the things that we know is that when you raise, when you take money out of local communities and send it to Washington, D.C., that is an economic loss for that community. And so, because that's money that people don't spend at the local cafe or the local card shop or the flower shop, that money's gone, and it doesn't come back. It really just doesn't come back. So I argue, listen, there's a way to do this. If we got people just, if we got back down to 5.7, which the unemployment rate 2 years ago in January was 5.7%, and gasoline was $1.87. If you want to recharge this economy, and getting people back to work would eat up more than half, by the way, if we just got back to those numbers, eat up more than half of what this debt is. That would be huge. And so I argue, do tax reform where it's fair. We don't have businesses trying to escape overseas to try to pay taxes, and make it so that you people want to do business in this country. We have to stop demonizing business. If you want a job, guess what? You got to have an employer. And so when we get through all of that and shake ourselves out of it, I think we're going to be in a much better place. Simply raising tax rates isn't going to do it. The top 10% of earners in America already pay 70% of all the taxes. So it doesn't make sense to me. So everyone says, well, it's not fair. Well, what is fair? 100? Should they pay it all? Should we not? You know, I don't want to pay any, but should somebody else pay all my share? So I argue that we've got to kind of shake ourselves out of this and say, what got us to the world's largest middle class? And it wasn't big government in Washington, D.C. spending your money. It was entrepreneurs in your community investing in themselves, hiring people, getting people back to work. And if we can shake ourselves out of this notion that all of a sudden Washington, D.C. has all the answers and the rest of America does not, and we break that trend, and it's here in this town anyway, and I think we're going to be back on our share. And I don't think just raising taxes is going to do it. So you do that, you get people back to work, stop regulating to death, which is happening now, stop taxing people to death, which is happening now, and we can move forward.
When you think about what's going to happen, what you've been through really wasn't even the hard work. The hard work is going to be the cuts that are going to come, and these cuts are going to affect Michigan greatly, aren't they?
I think they're going to affect every American. I'll say I'm the intelligence chairman, so my job is to go back through and start finding cuts in the intelligence world, the agencies that provide intelligence, keep America safe. You know, and I vowed that I'll cut, but I won't cut to where it impacts their mission and they can't keep us safe. So that's a tough job, but it goes through all of those. And I think if we do this rationally, it doesn't have to have the kind of impact that people are thinking it will. There's a lot of waste in Washington, D.C., and we've just got to have the courage to find it and get rid of it. And just be this. People want solutions. And if we can get through these with real solutions to this problem without, you know, every time there's a budget problem, they say we're cutting the teachers and the police first or the Social Security and Medicare first. Well, that's not true. And we've just got to give an honest, fact-based approach budget to the American people. And they're going to be with us because they've went through this. They've lived through this in their own house. And they've had enough of all of the stuff back in Washington.
Two more questions for you, Congressman. I know you have to get going. First of all, just from your perspective, what is government's responsibility when it comes to taking care of folks? And we bring up welfare, we bring up Social Security, we bring up Medicaid and Medicare. It appears that many who use these services take advantage of the system. What do you think is our responsibility?
Well, I believe in a safety net, and the safety net has done a lot of great things for America, Social Security being one of them. And by the way, Social Security is a separate thing. You pay your Social Security tax, if you will, and that's money that you'll draw back out, and that's different from income tax, and some people get the two confused. And so we built a system around Social Security. I think there's a way that we can protect that for future generations. Same with Medicare. You know, in this last health care bill, the president forever changed Medicare. He cut $575 billion and then put this board in for rationing. And that will forever change Medicare. We're already seeing doctors drop out. I mean, this is a real problem, but we have to fix it as Americans, knowing that this safety net is an important thing for the health and benefit of our country as we move forward.
All right. Now, you talked about security of the country. I've been seeing a lot of news reports on Fox News and reading how China has been flexing their muscles, showing off the new toys that they have, showing off the military might that they have. And here we are, and it looks like going to be in a position where we're going to start cutting our military. And I specifically wanted to talk about cybercrime. It looks like the Chinese have invested a lot of resources in trying to hack into not only government but business and try to find out a lot of our secrets.
Well, I have to tell you, they are ferocious thieves of our intellectual property. And if the cyber crime keeps me up at night, and I spend a lot of time on the committee formulating. Matter of fact, I'll have some bills coming out in September that will help us address it. But they are incredibly aggressive about it, and we should make no bones about it that China's interest is not in the same interest of the United States. They don't care. You know, they have a billion people, so they don't care if they steal every job that we have. They don't care, and they don't care if they have to steal it in order to get it. We've seen that over and over again. So it is something that we're working on now. We have to get better at it, and it's not just the Chinese. Chinese happen to be the most prolific. But also the Russians are engaged, and other nation states are now rising up into this new cyber world. And remember, it's a cheaper way to go. You don't have to build an aircraft carrier. You invest this money in a whole bunch of hackers and put them in a room and let them go at it with the right tools, and they could be pretty dangerous.
Do we do that against other countries?
No. Well, our goal is to protect our National Security Agency, the NSA, protects against attacks, but it only does it between .mil and .gov. Our .com, we do not conduct industrial espionage. That's just not the policy of the United States. Other countries do, and they do it with robust interest. Now, we do have, the FBI is supposed to stop industrial espionage, or at least fight it, and they're having a hard time keeping up because of China and Russia and others. And they're spending as much time trying to steal our company secrets so that they can steal those jobs as they are anything.
All right, Congressman Mike Rogers, live on the Tony Connolly Morning Show. As always, Congressman, thanks so much for your time.
Hey, Tony, thanks for having me on.